Do you want a bit before the theme music? Do you want it? Do you, it's up to you. Do you want the bit before the theme music? Don't you want a bit before the theme music? You want one? Well, you ain't getting one. Tough. Not in the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, says team, a trusty old Red Rider carbine action 200 shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to episode, insert number here, of the Total Christmas Podcast. It's so good to have you here. Let's start off with the interactive bit. Here it comes. How you been? Uh-huh. Really? Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Right. Thank you very much. Yours sincerely, Jack Ford. I don't know what happened there. I don't want to be a part of that. Let's forget it ever happened. Right. Now, last episode, I'm surprised no one called me on this, so I'm calling myself on it. I made a mistake. Because when I was doing the Christmas Carol version, I don't know if you remember, it was about the Highway to Heaven Christmas Carol, and there was a bit in it, I said they'd taken it directly from the book, the quote. And I'll play it for you. This is the bit.
But tomorrow's Christmas.
That was the snippet that I thought was directly from the book. It's not from the book. And I should know this, being a self-proclaimed expert on the book. Clearly I was wrong. Clearly I'm not an expert. It's actually from like one of the movie versions. Pretty sure it's the Alistair Sim version. He goes, but tomorrow's Christmas, sir. So yeah, no one called me on it. I'm calling myself. Mistakes were made. You're going to have to forgive me because it's Christmas. Christmas is a time for forgiving. Now, I don't think I've got anything else to report actually. So should we just get straight into it? Yeah, cool, let's do that then. Let's get straight into it. Come on, let's go. Come on. Yeah, come on. Bring your mum. Bring your dad. Bring your kids. Let's go. Come on. Hop in. Let's just... Come on. Yule lugs. Yule lugs. You'll love them. I'll love them. We'll love them. We all love the Yule lugs. The Yule lugs. The Yule lugs. Those Yule lugs. Yeah. It has been ages since I've done a Yule log. And you know what? It's still ages, because this doesn't really count as a Yule log. It sort of does, doesn't really. But I'm going to talk about it anyway. So this one features Terry Crews. Now, if you're not familiar with Terry Crews, you should be. You've probably seen him. He's been in loads of crud. He was actually an American football player. He played in the NFL in the 1990s, like from 91 to about 97, I think. And he was... become an actor. He was in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. That's what I best know him from. But he was also in the Expendables series. You know, his character in the Expendables is called Hail Caesar. He was also in Idiocracy, where he played the president. He's been in a lot of other crud. He was in Everyone Hates Chris. So you don't need me to give you his whole filmography. His name's Terry Crews. He's also, in 2015, 2016, he presented Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Which is interesting, bearing in mind, you know, he was an action star and presenting a game show. And then, after presenting America's Got Talent, The Champions, he went on to be the presenter of America's Got Talent. Again, I don't really think he's the best man for that. Or more to the point, he's great at the job, but I think there's other jobs that he'd be better at, like being in films where he beats people up. But that's just me, you know. I'm not advocating violence, of course. I'm just saying that he strikes me more as an action star than a presenter of some crappy talent show. Now, this Yule log features Terry Crews painting a picture a la Bob Ross. So he's there. Now, it is a Yule log in that in front of where he's painting, there is a fire burning. And to be honest, I think they've added it as a sound effect, but the whole time he's doing his painting, there are crackling and log burning sounds, as well as Christmas music playing as well. So you've got that in the background. And then he's there painting, just like Bob Ross, like he even says at one point, happy little trees. And he tells you what he's doing, so he's talking to you the whole time, and he does this fantastic picture. Now, I can't lie to you, I did not know the man was an artist, but I'm going to read this direct from Wikipedia, because if I don't read it direct, I'm just going to do a hash job of trying to give you the gist of it. So here we go. Right, this is what you didn't know. Crewe's first job in the arts was as a courtroom sketch artist in Flint, Michigan. He received an art scholarship from college before an athletic scholarship. He later worked as a courtroom sketch artist for WJRT. During his football career, Crewe supplemented his income by creating portraits of fellow players. At times, it was the primary income on which his family depended, typically bringing $5,000 for a two-month commission. His work included a series of NFL-licensed lithographs. He believes his imaginative side has transferred itself to his acting work. There you go. And so this Yule log is him sitting there. I don't know if it's in his house or in a studio, but there's a fireplace with a log burning, and he's sat at his easel and canvas painting a picture. And it's a lovely picture. I won't spoil it for you, but it's a lovely picture. I mean, if you watch it, you'll find out what it is. If you don't watch it, you'll never know that he's doing a Christmas tree. So yeah, I highly recommend this Yule log, or not, actually. It's up to you. It's a bit tricky, this one, because a lot of the Yule logs you can just put in the background and it's just a log burning, there you go, and you can do what you're doing, you know, go about your day, or sit and drink wine and chat to your loved one, or, you know, or if you're having a party, just have it in the background. It just looks nice, doesn't it, you know? This one, because he's talking to you the whole time, it's a bit more engaged. It's not just background. So, you know, I give it a shot, but I don't know. Don't give it a shot. I don't know. It's your life. Why? You don't come to me for life advice. If you did, this is the advice I'd give you. Sort yourself out. But you didn't come for that advice, so I'm not going to give you that advice. Can we just finish this segment? I liked it. I really liked it. I like Terry Crews. I like his work. And I particularly like his picture. So, yeah, I liked it. That's this episode's Yule log. Let's move on.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
Bob's here. And I like this one. I like this one a lot. So I'm not going to tell you what it is. I'm just going to play it. Here it is.
Drink responsibly, but not too responsibly. You still want to have fun, right? I suppose since I have started this segment, I haven't said anything about the doctor. Doctor? Doctor who? I know, I'm sorry, that's just the routine joke. Yes, Doctor Who, the long-running BBC series about a time-traveling alien who looks just like a human. It has been on the air since 1963. I can't say that I'm a fan, as I've only watched the Christmas episodes. I mean, I don't understand all the goings-on, the characters, or the references, but they are still pretty interesting and enjoyable. I mean, I have seen evil snowmen, Santa battling dream crabs, and a science fiction Christmas carol. And about four different doctors, because he can regenerate, you know? So the doctor has a spaceship, the TARDIS, that looks like a police box, which is the blue version of those red English phone booths that we know about here in the States. It looks small on the outside, but it is giant on the inside. So when he and a woman are being attacked in one of those Christmas shows, he tells her to get inside. She asks him, when looking at it, if this is his snogging booth, and my do you hear what I hear antenna went up. Snogging? Ooh, it even sounds dirty. Now we have smooching and snuggling in the States, but what the heck even is a snog? This is the British version of what we Americans would call making out, but with all the trimmings. Snogging is a bit more than kissing, but the origin of the word is said to be unknown. We do know that the term was commonly used during World War II, and some attribute it to the Royal Air Force, of all things, which used snog as a blend of snug and cod, which means to flatter or to flirt with a person. So snog was meant to be or to go courting with a girl. Of course, there are other references. Snog also means to push with the head, like a cow. Not very romantic. Or snog is a stick used in cock squoiling. This is a game that involves throwing sticks at cocks. Don't ask. Or snog also means cheek-to-cheek dancing or petting to music. Yikes. I suppose the most important thing is that we know what it means, and it seemed to keep all those kids at Hogwarts very busy. Cheers and happy Christmas.
Yeah, so, do you know what? I think it is just making out, snogging. If we say snogging, it wouldn't include anything else. Like, say, if someone said, oh, what'd you get? I'd say, I just snogged her. That would mean I just got a kiss, like a, you know, maybe some tongues and that. I don't want to go into the intricacies, but I wouldn't have got my hands anywhere they shouldn't have been, is what I'm saying with snogging. Don't really say it much, actually. I'm just trying to think the last time I used it, not including today. No, I don't know. I don't know if the kids still use it. I don't know what they say these days. Kissing and snogging are sort of interchangeable. Yeah. Snogging. You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if, from what Bob was saying, it actually comes from the cows butting heads thing rather than the Royal Air Force thing. I could be wrong, but I just get the feeling that's more what it's like. You know, it is like two cows butting heads together. Or at least the women I used to kiss. Yeah. Okay, anyway, that was this one. Thanks, Bob. He'll be back again later. Now it's time for this.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a
humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Boys and girls, this episode's version of A Christmas Carol is Xena Warrior Princess, and it's called A Solstice Carol. And I don't know if you're familiar with Xena Warrior Princess. It was a spin-off of the Hercules TV show, The Legendary Journeys of Hercules, I think it was called. It ran from 1995 to 1999, and it ran for 134 episodes. And I think it was after the second series, it overtook Hercules in popularity. It starred Lucy Lawless as Xena, who was a warrior princess, hence the title, and Renee O'Connor as Gabrielle, who is her sidekick in it. I don't want to go into the ins and outs of the show. It was very popular. She became quite an icon, old Xena did. And this was the only Christmas episode they did. So, this is how it starts. So you've got this king, okay? His name's King Silvus. And he's in his court, and some subjects are dragged in by these guards. And they've been not paying their taxes, and I think they also were celebrating the solstice, because this is before Christmas, you see, so it's a solstice. So because these poor people that have been dragged in haven't been paying their taxes, he sentences them to hard labour and sends them to the poorhouse for Christmas, which isn't the best kind of holiday for Christmas, really. And it's not even Christmas, it's the solstice, which makes it even worse, or better, I don't know. We cut to Xena, so that's sort of just setting us up, so we know the Scrooges, right? You got the idea? Yeah, you figured that out, didn't you? Then it cuts to Xena, and she's walking through this market with Gabrielle, and some kid comes running up and nicks her chakram. Now, I don't know if you know what a chakram was. It was this disc that she used to throw, like a frisbee, but I don't know if it had blades on it or she just hit people with it, but that was her weapon of choice. And the deal was, she was so good at throwing it, she'd throw it and it'd always come back to her. And this kid's run off with it, so she sort of chases him down, and Gabrielle's about to catch him, but Xena's like, hold on a second, and they follow him back to where he lives, right? When they get there, he's already managed to put it on the top of a Christmas tree and decorated the rest around it with loads of ribbons and that. So I don't know how long it took him to go and turn up where he is. Turns out he lives in an orphanage, right, that is run by this lovely lady. And she's like, look, you've chewed my chakram thing. And he's like, oh, but it looks nice on a tree. I was going to give it back. No, you weren't. How are you going to give it back? Anyway, just then, a bunch of guards come in. And these guys are there to evict All the Orphans, which is a bit of a callback to what happened in the Highway to Heaven episode. Do you remember when the orphanage was going to get shut down because they couldn't pay their rent? In this one, the orphanage is going to shut down because they're not paying taxes. God knows what taxes you're paying in an orphanage, but whatever taxes they are, they ain't been paying them. Plus, they see they've got a solstice tree up, so they're like, oh, right, you're in big trouble now. Xena, she, like, makes a Xena noise. And jumps up and gets her chakram and she throws it at them, at the guards, and because it's already got ribbons tied to it, because it's been on this tree and they've tied ribbons to it, they get wrapped up in ribbons. And they've also got this other guy with them, whose name turns out to be Centocles, and he is like the king's, I don't know what the name would be of his job really, but he's like, he's lackey, I suppose. Let's say he's the king's lackey. And the guards, or I don't know, they leave, something happens, and Centocles, who actually turns out to be a good guy, even though he's working for the king, he used to be a toy maker, and he tells them that the queen died on Solstice Eve, and now the king hates Solstice and everyone, it seems. And then Gabrielle says, this reminds her of a story. And the kids are like, oh, you're going to tell us a story? So she sits down and tells them the story. I'm going to play the story for you. Have a listen to this.
Once in a land far away, there was this rich but miserly man named Croesus. And his heart was so hard that his servants begged the gods to intervene. They sent the fates to separate the strands of his life so that he might see himself more clearly. Unfortunately, Croesus didn't mend his ways. So the gods turned him into a spirit, doomed to walk the earth forever, as invisible to others as they were to him in life.
I don't like this story.
That's not a great story. That's a pretty naff story. As Christmas stories go, the kids are all sat round, totally engaged with the story, and then it's like, oh, that was it? Great story. Well done, Gabrielle. Anyway, this is when Xena hatches her plan, okay? How they're gonna sort the king out. And we all know what that plan is, of course. So, Xena visits the king while he's asleep, or in bed at least, like Jacob Marley style. She's like, look, I'm just telling you now, you're going to be visited by some fates. Actually, they call them the fates in this. So the king's like, calls the guards. He's not stupid. He calls the guards. So Xena does a runner, but when she's running off through the castle, she comes to this room and it's like all covered in cobwebs and that. But there's a picture on the wall of the king and his wife, and there's a big Christmas tree all covered in decorations but also covered in dust and cobwebs, because like, oh, he did used to love Christmas, and he's kept this room the same ever since she died. And he's like, oh, we can use this. So then Xena, she goes back again as the ghost of Christmas past, and the way she's done that is she's changed her clothes and she's covering her face over. So that's really clever. And they've got this bit with an hourglass where the hourglass sort of raises up and starts spinning around the other way. And that's sort of all done by Centocles, the toy maker. He's sort of helping in the background behind a curtain. I don't know why I've mentioned that bit. It's just a bit. It's an aside. Let's move on. So she takes the king to the cobweb room and she's like, look at this. This is your past. This is what Christmas could have been. And while they're there, who should turn up but like this ghost of his ex-wife, and she's got like a face covering, so you can't definitely tell it's her, because it obviously ain't her, it's Gabrielle, right? And she says about how she died, and he's like, you didn't die, you just run off and left me. I'm like, oh, didn't realise that. Yeah, I'm just talking metaphorically that I died when I left you, sort of thing. Now, at this point, I realised that I should have told you about when Gabrielle was going to buy stuff to do the whole free ghost thing, and she bought a mule. Yeah, that's part of the story. So she's got this mule, and what they've done is, right, they've tied a rope to the back of her, well, I guess it's going around her shoulders, and it's over something and out the window, and downstairs with the mule is Centocles. You remember the king's lackey? Is this getting a bit convoluted? Are you keeping up? I hope you are. I'm having trouble and I've watched it twice. Right, so the mule is like, walks along with a rope tied to his back, and that pulls her up in the air, so it looks like she's floating. She looks like a ghost. That's what we're trying to do. That's the impression we're trying to give. So the guards turn up and Centocles sees him and he panics and he runs off. So the mule sort of drops Gabrielle, but luckily the king doesn't see that because Xena has already given him a potion to make him go back to sleep again. Oh my life. Okay, we're just going to try and see if we can get through this, okay? Because actually, it's not that bad. Right, so next, right, after she's had his sleeping drug, they put him back in bed. Who should turn up next but the Ghost of Christmas Present. Do you know who the Ghost of Christmas Present is? Yeah, it's blooming Xena again, but she's changed her clothes and she does a slightly deeper voice. Well done, Xena. So they put the king in like normal person's clothes and she takes him to visit his subjects. And the subjects he visits are the orphans. Right? He takes them to the orphanage and the orphans are all singing a song. And the king, he ain't enjoying it. And I don't know if it's because he feels guilty or if because the song's a bit naff. But, you know, he's there anyway. All of a sudden, guards turn up because they've got to close down the orphanage for not paying their orphanage taxes. And the king faints. At this point, Gabriella and Centocles come down the I forgot to say, right? So Centocles is all worried. He's like, I'm the king's lackey. If I get caught, I'll be like, I don't know, killed or something. They'll do something to me. It's not going to be very nice, especially at solstice or Christmas. And so he puts on a disguise. Now this disguise, he's already got white hair, right? He puts on a white beard and like a red suit. Do you see where we're going with this? Did you notice the name? His name's Centocles. Centocles. Santa Claus. See, it's there. It's there. It was in front of us the whole time. And he's a toy maker. Anyway, he comes down the chimney with Gabriella and they fight off all these guards using the toys as weapons. And I don't massively want to go into it, but I will say this. It's silly. It's very silly. Yeah, there's a bit where Gabriella's hula hooping and she goes to the guards, oh, do you like the Christmas present? And they're all solstice present. And they all kind of, oh, yeah, we like looking at you hula hooping, sexy thing. And then she lifts the hula hoop up and puts it over their heads. And so they're sort of like stuck together on a hula. Oh, God. It's like Home Alone. Did I already say that? Well, it is. But they're using toys the whole time. So like, they throw marbles on the floor and they're scattering over those. There's a terrible bit where Gabrielle, Xena and Centocles all have bows and arrows, you know, with the like the arrow with the sucker on the end, and all three of them shoot those, and these guards have got suckers on their heads. It's like, well, that's not really gonna stop a guard. He's gonna be annoyed, he's got a sucker on his head, he's gonna pull it off, but that's not really it. Then she gets a couple of stockings. I said I wasn't gonna go into it. I'm going into it, aren't I? She gets a couple of stockings and I think they've got, I don't know, like a tangerine in the bottom or something. She's swinging those around and hitting people with them, a bit like nunchucks sort of thing. And then, even more like nunchucks, she gets a marionette puppet and she looks at it and it's Hercules, isn't it? From his TV show, Hercules. And she's using that as nunchucks, so swinging it around and hitting people with it. And as she does that, the music from the Hercules TV show plays. So that was nice, I guess. Now, while this is going on, the king wakes up, and this is a bit of a short bit, really. Not much happens here at all. The king wakes up, and the lady, this time it's the lady who runs the orphanage, right? She's got her face covered. She is the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, and he's there, and all he can hear is like moaning. So I'm guessing they've got the orphans in the background going, oh, oh, and he's like, oh, this cold, it's cold here, it's as cold as, and he doesn't say the grave, but he suggests it's as cold as the grave. He's like, oh, I'm dead or something, I don't know. That bit was a bit weak, to be honest. But then he's like, I'm gonna change. And so he goes running out and he helps Xena and gang defeat the guards. And so the guards all run off and leave, or they're all knocked out. I don't know, something's happened to the guards. And then at this point, right, are you ready? Bit of a twist. At this point, the lady that runs the orphanage, she comes through and she takes off her cowl. And oh my goodness, it's the king's ex-wife who ran off and left him. And she's like, look, if you're going to change, then let's get back together and live happily ever after. And that's what happens. So I guess they live happily ever after. Now, one thing I wanted to add, just quickly, which I should have said earlier, but I didn't because I'm badly organised. The ghosts, they're referred to as the three Moray or Fates. And their names are Lachesis, Clotho and Otropos. And this actually comes from Greek mythology. And you've got Lachesis, who hands out the strings, the string of destiny it sort of is, like your life is a line of string. Clotho, who is the weaver of the cloth, and Atropos, who is in charge of the destiny of the strings. Look into it if you care, but I just thought it was nice. It was a nice twist. Instead of saying the Ghost of Solstice Yet to Come, or the Ghost of Solstice Past or Present, you know, I just thought that was a nice idea. Now, the very end bit, So Xena has got her horse and she's walking along with Gabrielle. She's got the mule that was in it earlier that I probably should have spent more time mentioning. They're walking along and they see this couple, right? And they've got a brand new baby. And they are going somewhere. I'm guessing they're leaving Bethlehem because they've got the baby with them. And they say, oh, we're heading to this town. She says, oh, we can just give you directions. They're like, oh, we're in a bit of a rush. And she says, well, if you're in a rush, you're going to need to ride there. Why don't you have this donkey? And they give the donkey to, who we're led to believe are, Mary Joseph and the baby Jesus. So that was nice. And then it sort of pans up and you can see the star in the sky, which is, like it says in the Bible, the star could be seen in daylight. And apparently, although I haven't seen it, that ties in with the Hercules episode that was released at Christmas when this one came out. So, yeah, there's that. One other thing. Now, each episode of Xena Warrior Princess used to have like a funny disclaimer at the bottom, like no animals were harmed in the making of this. Well, the one that they added at the end of this one reads as follows. Centocles was not harmed during the production of this motion picture. However, several chimneys are in dire need of repair. I thought that was quite a nice twist at the end there. A little addition that they gave us. So, yeah, that's it. That is the Solstice Carol from Xena Warrior Princess. It's not on YouTube. I found it on Daily Motion. I'm sure you can find it streaming if you want to watch it. It's not bad. And if you're a fan of Xena already, then you should definitely give it a shot. Yeah, the one I found on Daily Motion, very poor quality, a bit very blurry. And also loads of adverts. Loads of adverts you have to sit through. So, you know, it's there if you want it. Or I'm sure you can find it streaming somewhere. That is this episode's version of A Christmas Carol, and now it's time for this. Boys and girls, it's the hilarious part of the show where I tell you a Christmas joke from my Christmas joke toilet roll. Then we all laugh uproariously, have a wonderful time. It's something. Yeah, it's definitely something. Okay, here's this episode's joke. A wonderful Christmas song told me to deck the halls, so I did. Mr. and Mrs. Hall were not pleased. There we go, so we did that, didn't we? And now we can move on with the rest of the show. Bob's back, boys and girls, and he's going to tell you another great way that you can keep Christmas alive all year round. Bob, can I just say you're looking beautiful today?
Hey, thanks, Jack. Okay, to be honest, I stole this Christmas Everyday idea from another podcast. I know, I was listening to Tim Babb's Can't Wait for Christmas a few years ago, and a listener described how he would buy Christmas-themed lottery tickets to scratch off on the 25th of each month throughout the whole year. Now, I know we have these in the U.S., and I know that they have scratch-offs in England, but I don't know about anywhere else in the world. Now, in America, at the holidays, our lottery tickets are Christmas-themed. They will have presents, Santas, and snowmen images on them, and they have names like Merry Millionaires or Holiday Bucks. These are advertised to be used as stocking stuffers or to be given as a remembrance gift to your postal person, hairdresser, newspaper carrier, etc. They have festive symbols on them, and there are numbers that you scratch off to see if you have a match. If you do, you win a cash prize. Now, I buy them all up in December, 12 of them, and I do this as a silent Christmas celebration every month. I admit that winning a cash prize is nice, but it's more for the effort of reminiscing and when you see the colors and pictures smiling about Christmas. Now, if you have a secret Christmas indulgence that you want to confess, just share it with Jack, and he will tell me, just me, I promise.
That's another great idea. I really like that one. I'll tell you a story about scratch cards. So me and my mate got invited to a wedding from this girl we worked with. We both worked in the same place, and she invited us to her wedding. It was the only the evening do. We weren't invited to the service and everything. It was not a massive affair, but she invited us along, and we're like, well, we better get her a card. And my mate was like, oh, let's get her a scratch card as well, you know, put that in there, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? Bought her the scratch card, and we like filled out the card, and we're about to put the scratch card in it, and I was like, if this wins £1 million, we're gonna be kicking ourselves, aren't we? And he's like, yeah. So we scratched it off, and it didn't win anything, and we didn't put it in the card. And so we just gave her a card for her wedding. What a pair of tight gits we were. Wow. Yeah. Tell you another story about that wedding, right? So you know the bit where the bride throws the bouquet, and you know, the person who catches it is the next person to get married. Well, she sort of stood up on the stage, you know, like they've got like a disco going on, and she stood up there and she throws this bouquet over her shoulder, and I ran up, and because obviously I'm taller than all these other ladies that are there, and I just leaned across and grabbed it out of midair as it flew over, and walked off from the dance floor smelling it. It was made of plastic, and I sat back down, and the DJ was like, was it? Who's that? Who's that bloke? What's that? What's his name? What? Jack? 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 Who's Jack? Jack? Bring that back! Bring that back! And I had to walk back up to the stage and give it back again so she could throw it again so someone else could catch it. And I wasn't the next one to get married. So, there you go. Nothing to do with Christmas. Thought I'd share that with you. Now it's time for this... Stories about St. Nicholas! Now, boys and girls, my buddy Scott Newman is back, and he's going to be telling us another story about the life and times of the real Saint Nicholas. Here it comes.
While yet a young man, Nicholas followed the example of his uncle, the abbot, by making a pilgrimage to the birthplace of Christianity, the Holy Land. Desiring a serene time of preparation, Nicholas set sail on an Egyptian ship, where the other pilgrims did not know who he was. The first night, he dreamed a storm would put them all at peril. When he awoke in the morning, he warned the sailors that a severe storm was coming, but they need not fear, for God will protect us. Almost immediately, the sky darkened and strong winds roared round the ship. The wind and waves made it impossible to keep the ship under control. Even with lowered sails, the sailors feared for their very lives and begged Nicholas to pray for their safety. One sailor climbed the main mast, tightening the ropes so the mast would not crash onto the deck. As he was coming back down, the sailor slipped, fell to the deck, and was killed. While Nicholas prayed, the storm did quiet, relieving the sailors. Their comfort, however, was dampened by grief over their comrade's death. As Nicholas prayed over the dead sailor, he was revived as if he had only been asleep. The man awakened without pain, and the ship finished the journey to the Holy Land. Nicholas then embarked on his pilgrimage to the holy places, walking where Jesus had walked. One night, while staying with a family in Jerusalem, he wanted to pray at the only church remaining in Jerusalem at the time. It was the Church of the Room of the Last Supper on Mount Zion. As he approached the heavy locked doors, they swung open of their own accord, allowing him to enter the church. Nicholas fell to the ground in thanksgiving. Before returning to Lycia, he visited the Holy Sepulchre, Golgotha, Bethlehem, and many other holy sites.
I've got to say, I sort of feel like these stories are just St. Nicholas sort of bragging a bit about the stuff he's got up to, and he's just sort of elaborating on what actually happened. You know, it's like, yeah, I told him, well, there's going to be this massive storm, and then it happened, and there's this huge storm, and everyone's crying, and going, oh, Nicholas, help us. I'm like, don't worry, boys, I'm going to pray for you. And then one of them falls down, he's dead, literally, completely dead. Dead, right? I brought him back to life. Yeah, no, he wasn't just unconscious. He hadn't just knocked himself. No, he was definitely dead. Because I checked his pulse, all right? And tell you something else, right? I went up to this church, doors are locked, they just swung open. I walked in I goes, doing a bit of, like, Jesus and God stuff. That's me, I'm St. Nicholas. I could be wrong, you know what I mean? It could be other people exaggerating on these stories, but I don't know. Anyway, thanks for that, Scott. He does a blinding job reading them out. If you are not listening to Scott's podcasts, you should be. He's got the Christmas Morning podcast and also Tinsel Tunes podcast, which he does with Dwayne Bailey. They've just had a brand new episode drop about a week ago where they talk about the Christmas songs of Johnny Marks. Now, you might not know this, but the guy who wrote Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the song, he also wrote Have a Holly Jolly Christmas, it's the best day of the year, amongst a load of other, and Rocking Around the Christmas Tree as well. Rocking around the Crimbala tree, doo doo ba ba ba. Yeah, he wrote that as well, amongst a load of other Christmas songs. It's a fantastic episode, you've got to check it out. Tinseltunes.com, have a listen. Scott and Dwayne, they're doing a blinding job, and thank you so much again, Scott, for recording that story about the real life story of St. Nicholas. Now it's time for this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Ho ho! Saving the best bit for last, boys and girls. You love it, I love it, you don't really love it, you hate it, I actually do love it. It's the quiz! So, 10 questions, 10 answers, loads of fun and frolics, you know the score. Let's get started with question number one. A very easy one to get us started. In which 1946 film does George Bailey attempt suicide on Christmas Eve? So, that's a simple one. Yeah, in the film It's a Wonderful Life, what film does... I'll move on. Question number two. At Christmas 1991, what did Harry Potter get for a Christmas present from Albus Dumbledore that had once belonged to Harry's father? I'll give you a clue. It wasn't a pair of his old pants. Because that's not a nice present, is it? I don't even know why I bothered mentioning it. Question number three. Who had the 1963 Christmas number one single in the UK with the song I Want to Hold Your Hand? It's not a Christmas song, it's a Christmas number one. Question number something. Which Tchaikovsky ballet is set on Christmas Eve and the wooden gift that Clara likes is broken by her brother Fritz? Well, Fritz sounds like a right arsehole. Breaking a nutcracker on Christmas Eve. Terrible state of affairs. What ballet is that from? Right, question number five. This is one of those, right, where I've got to try and pronounce a word in a foreign language and I get it completely wrong. So I'm going to spell it for you as well, right? Which European country's name for Santa Claus is Sammy Claus? And it's spelled Sammy Claus, S-A-M-I-C-H-L-A-U-S. And he has a creepy looking mysterious helper called Muttley. That's not true, actually. It's actually Schmutzley. But it does sound a bit like Muttley, doesn't it? You remember Dick Dastardly and Muttley? He used to laugh like this. Yeah. Okay. Question number something. In 1975, which British multi-instrumentalist had a number four hit with an instrumental version of the carol In Dulce Jubilo? Which is also the tune to Good Christian Men Rejoice. Do you know what? I'm going to play a bit of it for you. Here it comes. Okay, in the 1947 film Miracle on 34th Street, which character says, oh, Christmas isn't just a day, it's a frame of mind? Who says that? And I want the character's name, all right? Question number, I don't know. Bedford, Wellington and Early Half Tall are varieties of what vegetable? What type of vegetable? It's Bedford. Well, you heard the question. Right. Question number nine. This is pretty easy. Little Larry, Puny Pete and Small Sam were names considered but not used for which character in a famous piece of Christmas literature? And the final question, which must mean it's question number 10. Are you ready? In what European language is... Oh, goodness me. It's just... It's like letters Well, I suppose it is words, because it's in the language. But it's, and the A's have got two dots over the top. Right, I'm going to try and read it out to you, right? It's Hiva Yulua. Right, in what European... Goodness me, can you imagine that? You see some bloke in the street. It's Christmas Eve. He doffs his cap and says, Hiva Yulua. It's not going to happen, is it? And if it does happen, you'll be like, are you alright, mate? Have you had too much of the old eggnog? Goodness gracious. Right, what country do they talk like that? Apart, oh dear. Do you know what? I'm going to look it up, actually. Because the A's have got two dots over the top. I'm going to find out what that's called. Here you go. Hold on a second. So they're called umlauts, or sometimes called diuresis. And they're used to modify the suggested pronunciation of the letter A. Doesn't tell me how, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a recording of someone actually saying it properly. All right? And then you've got to tell me what language that's in. Okay? Here it comes.
Hivayolua.
Right, what language was that some bloke saying Happy Christmas in? Which sounded very little like the way I was saying it. Right, that was the 10 questions. Now, here come your 10 answers. In which 1946 film does George Bailey attempt suicide on Christmas Eve? He doesn't actually attempt suicide, does he? He's thinking about it, but he doesn't actually do it. And that was, of course, It's a Wonderful Life. Question number two. At Christmas 1991, what did Harry Potter get for a Christmas present from Albus Dumbledore that had once belonged to Harry's father? And the answer is a pair of his underpants. See, I was lying when I said it wasn't his underpants, because it wasn't his underpants. It was the invisibility cloak, or the cloak of invisibility. Question number three. Who had the 1963 Christmas number one single with the song, I Wanna Hold Your Hand? I Wanna... It was the Beatles. Question number four. Which Tchaikovsky ballet is set on Christmas Eve and the wooden gift that Clara likes is broken by her git of a brother, Fritz? The answer, of course, is the Nutcracker. Next one. Which European country's name for Santa Claus is Sammy Claus, or Sam, I don't know, who has a creepy-looking mysterious helper called Schmutzli? That is a Switzerland. So now you know. I've no idea what Schmutzli looks like. I might have to Google that. I might not bother. I've got a lot on my plate at the moment. Question number something else. In 1975, which British multi-instrumentalist had a number four hit with an instrumental version of the carol In Dulce Jubilo? Well, I can tell you it wasn't Dave Youngmeadow. It was actually Mike Oldfield. So, yeah, if you're not familiar with Mike Oldfield, he did the old Tubular Bells. Like, that was the theme music to The Exorcist. Yeah, very famous musician. So, next one. In the 1947 film Miracle on 34th Street, which character says...
Oh, Christmas isn't just a day. It's a frame of mind.
And that was, of course, Kris Kringle. If you put Santa Claus, you ain't getting a point, okay? You ain't getting a point. Kris Kringle. Next one. Bedford, Wellington and Early Half Tall are varieties of what vegetable? Well, of course, it's Brussels sprout. Because if you say what vegetable would you associate with Christmas, it's only going to be Brussels sprout, isn't it? What are the Brussels sprouts doing the rest of the year? Where are they? Are they hiding somewhere? What are people doing with them? I don't know. I do not know what they're doing. Question... Oh, number nine now. Right, Little Larry, Puny Pete... and Small Sam were names considered but not used, obviously, for which character in a famous piece of Christmas literature? Of course, it's Tiny Tim, right? Puny Pete! Imagine calling your son Puny Pete. Come on, Puny Pete. Come on, Scrawny Sid. What other awful names? Oi, Feeble Fred. Get over here. Oi, Malnutritioned... Oi, Malnutritioned Mike. What are you doing sitting in the corner with your crutch there? Sort yourself out. Goodness me, Puny Pete. Thank goodness we got Tiny Tim, eh? Crikey. I wonder how true that is. Anyway, last one. In what European language is...
Hivayolua.
The Christmas greeting? That was Finnish. Ah, and what a great way to finish the quiz. Hey! Right, I don't know if you're interested, but I can tell you I would have scored 8. I would have scored 8 out of 10. I tell you, the two I wouldn't have got was the blimmin' foreign language ones. Yeah, I didn't know about Sammy Claus, and I didn't know about Heave... Oh, forget it. Whatever that Euler thing is. Yeah, so I don't know how you did. I hope you did really, really well, and I hope you enjoyed it. And now it's time for this. Boys and girls, this episode's recommendation is a true crime podcast. Now, I know there are loads of true crime podcasts out there. Hundreds. This is literally hundreds of true crime podcasts. And some are decent, some are naff. Now, I don't listen to a lot of them because, to be honest, I find them a bit depressing hearing about murders and crap like that. But what I've started listening to is podcasts about dumb criminals and stupid crimes that go wrong. And one of the ones I've found that I think is pretty good is called Excuse Me, That's Illegal. Now, I'll read out the blurb to you. It says this: need a little break from stories of murder and heartache? Join your boy Leroy as he takes a hardcore look at some softcore crimes. New episodes on the 10th, 20th and 30th of the month. I don't know what happens in February. I don't know what he does that month. If he just ignores it, I don't know. I do not know. Got to say, it's just a really good podcast. He talks about crimes that are, like, you know, that are a bit more petty and a bit more humorous, and he has a good laugh at them. I really enjoy it. He's just had his 101st episode at the end of last month, so the next one will be the 102nd, coming out on the 10th of May. Yeah, so that's this episode's recommendation. Now, here's the deal. If you've got any podcasts that you listen to and you want to recommend, or recommend them to me, I'd like to hear about it, because I mentioned this before, I've been having trouble, because I listen to like 40 hours roughly of podcasts a week. I do tend to fly through them, and also quite often I get sick of them. Some of them I'll just listen to too much. I think, now I've had enough of that. That would never happen with this podcast, of course. You love it, but other podcasts, I do tend to feel that way. But if you've got a podcast that you think is fantastic and you think I'd enjoy, then let me know. You know, drop me an email or just put a mention on the Facebook. But I don't know. Do something. All right, do something. So yeah, that's this episode's recommendation. It's a humorous look at fairly petty crimes. Excuse Me, That's Illegal. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. I want to say a big thank you to my mate Bob Baker for his two segments, and of course to Scott Newman from Tinsel Tunes for his reading of our St. Nicholas story. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, why not get in touch? Drop me an email at totalchristmas@gmail.com, or go on the website, that's totalchristmaspodcast.com, or you can message me through Facebook, or you can stand on a fence and shout really loud and I won't hear you. I won't, because I don't imagine I've got any listeners within probably a 20 mile radius. I don't know. Anyway, I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you. Merry Christmas.
Your Honor, every one of these letters is addressed to Santa Claus. The post office has delivered them. Therefore, the Post Office Department, a branch of the federal government, recognizes this man, Kris Kringle, to be the one and only Santa Claus.
Since the United States government declares this man to be Santa Claus, this court will not dispute it. Case dismissed.